This is a long chapter, chapter 11, Krishna's childhood pastimes. He had a really active childhood. The verse that we're reading from, text 9 from chapter 11, is emphasizing continuing to emphasize what was emphasized from the end of chapter 4, end of chapter 8 through 9 and 10, the Damodar Leela and the trees falling over the beginning of chapter 11. The intensity of the loving affection of the residents of Vrindavan for Krishna, especially those in the Vatsalya Rasa, especially Nanda and Yasoda. And we heard that the love of Nanda Yasoda was so strong that it enriched the already perfect parental affection of all the other Rijvasi elders, a very powerful influence, Nanda and Yasoda. And we just finished a section where the gopis, previously in chapter 8, they were complaining about Krishna's stealing of butter pastimes, Makhanchur pastimes. Then he was even younger then than now, and now they are doing things like having Krishna dance and having Krishna sing, patting him on the head, having him pick something up, and they get successively weightier things, and when he couldn't pick something up, he'd toddle over to it, point to it, and just stand there pointing to the thing. Sometimes pick up wooden shoes or a plank or something and hold it to his chest and toddle over to them and hand it to them, as if he's like a little, the word says, like a little toy puppet, a wooden puppet. And they're the puppeteers. Sometimes he would hit his arms, like showing how strong he was, little boy. And they would just delight in all these, this childhood pastimes. And then the statement is, to pure devotees throughout the world who could understand his activities, the Supreme Personality of Krishna, Godhead Krishna, exhibited how much he can be subdued by his devotees. His servants. In this way, he increased the pleasure of the Vrajvasis by his childhood activities. And so there was all this discussion about those that understand his Aishwarya, or his opulence, his divinity. And for those that do, the message is even greater than his powers is his quality of being controlled by his devotees, or his affection for those who have affection for him. Outstanding is this quality of Krishna, so Krishna wanted to show them. That's what the verse is saying, and his commentary is expanding on that. So here's Jiva Goswami's commentary from Kramasandarbha. Kramasandarbha is one of his three different Bhagavatam commentaries. It's the verse-by-verse one. Not every single verse, like Prabhupada didn't comment on every single verse, but most of the verses there's commentary. So his commentary here, short. By his childhood pastime, the Lord brought joy to the people of Braja, and showed those who knew about his powers that he was controlled by his servants. An accompanying aim of the pastime is described. All the cowherd people, Vrajasya, experienced joy. He was even controlled by the old servants who were present, not just Nanda and Yasoda, but others. Now here's a commentary by Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur taken from Uddhava Gita, 11th canto, chapter 15, text 15, where Krishna says to Uddhava, "Neither Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Sankarshan, the goddess of fortune, nor even my own self is as dear to me as you are." So that's pretty special. Question. How much is the devotee dear to you? Sridhar Swami answers, "Even Brahma, my own son, or Lord Shiva arising from my Swarup, or Sankarshana, my brother, or Lakshmi, my wife, and my own form are not as dear to me as the devotee. However," not to say the others aren't his devotees, "however, out of great joy, he praises Uddhava specifically," unquote. So now, Vishwanath goes on, "Though Brahma and others are also devotees, their identity as son, Ansha, brother, or wife is more prominent than their devotee portion." That's the sweetness. Even within relationship, there's degree of sweetness. And with Uddhava, the special position is the sweetness or the devotee portion. "According to the rule that things are designated by predominant qualities, they should be designated as son, Ansha, brother, and wife, rather than as devotees," although they're also devotees. "In persons like Nanda and Yashoda, their bhakta portion is much greater than their identity as parents because of the greatness of their prema. Thus they are called devotees rather than parents. They are dearest to Krishna." So this is commentary from the 11th canto, making reference to this 10th canto, chapter 11, verse, which says, "The Lord displays the attributes of coming under the control of his devotees." That's our topic this evening. That's a quote from the verse. "Thus, they are called devotees, and they bring Krishna under their control. The excellence of Yashoda is praised." And this goes back one chapter, two chapters, the Damodar Lila, chapter 9. "Neither Brahma, nor Shiva, nor even the goddess of fortune," same list, "who is always the better half of the Supreme Lord, can obtain from the Supreme Lord, the deliverer from this material world, such mercy as received by Mother Yashoda." That's a translation, text 20. Another meaning is, quote, "Amongst all these devotees, you are dearest. Hear this from my mouth," that's speaking to Uddhava. "Among all the devotees, Uddhava is the best. The gopis, however, are the best of all, since Uddhava prayed for the dust from their lotus feet." This is the conclusion of the Vaishnavas. Okay, so now going to back to the Damodar Lila, chapter 9. There's a verse, chapter text 19 from chapter 9. "Oh, Maharaj Parikshit, this entire universe," Shukadev to Maharaj Parikshit, "this entire universe with its great exalted demigods like Lord Shiva, Lord Brahma, and Lord Indra is under the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, yet the Supreme Lord has one transcendental attribute he comes under the control of his devotees. So Krishna controls the demigods and so forth, but Krishna is controlled by the devotees. That's the emphasis with our topic this evening. This was now exhibited by Krishna in this pastime, the Damodar Leela pastime. And here's the purport. Again, it's Vishwanath. This pastime of Krishna's is very difficult to understand, but devotees can understand it. It is therefore said, quote, "The Lord displays the transcendental attribute of coming under the control of his devotees, as stated in Brahma Samhita. Eko pyasa rachayatam jagadanda kotim yach chaktirasti jagadanda chayayadantaha andantarasta paramanu chayantarastam govindamadi purusham tamaham bhajami." By his one plenary portion as Paramatma, the Lord controls innumerable universes with all their demigods, yet he agrees to be controlled by a devotee. In the Upanishads, it is said that the Supreme Personality of Godhead can run with more speed than the mind, but here we see that although Krishna wanted to avoid being arrested by his mother, he was finally defeated, and Mother Yashoda captured him. Lakshmi Sahasra Shatasambrahma Sevyamanam. Krishna is served by hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune. Nevertheless, he steals butter, like one who is poverty-stricken. Yamaraj, the controller of all living entities, fears the order of Krishna, yet Krishna is afraid of his mother's stick. These contradictions cannot be understood by one who is not a devotee, but a devotee can understand how powerful is unalloyed devotion, unalloyed devotional service to Krishna. It is so powerful that Krishna can be controlled by an unalloyed devotee. Then he clarifies, this Britya Vashyata does not mean that he is under the control of the servant. Rather, he is under the control of the servant's pure love. Nice point. In Bhagavad Gita 121, it is said that Krishna becomes the chariot driver of Arjuna. Arjuna ordered him. What's the order? Senayor, Ubayor, Madhye, Ratam, Stapaye, Me Achuta. My dear Krishna, you have agreed to be my charioteer and to execute my orders. Please place my chariot between the two armies of soldiers. Krishna immediately executed this order, and therefore one may argue that Krishna is also not independent. But this is one's ajnana or ignorance. Krishna is always fully independent. When he becomes subordinate to his devotees, this is display of ananda chenmaya rasa, the humor of transcendental qualities that increases his transcendental pleasure. Everyone worships Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore he sometimes desires to be controlled by someone else. Such a controller can be no one else but a pure devotee. And then the next verse, text 10. So we're 10, 11, 10. It's the fruit vendor lady. Very beloved story. This is a part of his childhood pastimes. Once, a woman selling fruit was calling, "Oh, inhabitants of Vrajabhumi, if you want to purchase some fruits, come here. Upon hearing this, Krishna immediately took some grains and went to barter as if he needed some fruits. And this is Prabhupada's purport. Aborigines generally go to the villages to sell fruits. How much the Aborigines were attached to Krishna is described here. To show his favor to the Aborigines, he would immediately go to purchase fruits, bartering with paddy in his hand as he had seen others do. And Vishwanath writes, he gave joy even to the lowest Polinda caste among the inhabitants of Braja. Achyuta is full in every respect, but he wanted fruit. Although he is the giver of all fruits, he quickly went out with a handful of grains as only that was available at the moment. Jiva Goswami writes, with great enthusiasm, Shukadev speaks of other pastimes for 10.5 verses. Sridhar Swami does not comment on all these verses. So, in Jiva Goswami's writings, he was so loyal to Rupa Goswami and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Rupa Goswami was his uncle, but also his guru, and trained him in scriptures. So, and Rupa Goswami learned everything from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he was very faithful to both. And both, particularly Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, had mentioned Sridhar Swami as the best commentator, the principal commentator of Srimad Bhagavatam. So Jiva Goswami regularly relied very strongly on Sridhar Swami's commentary. We find this in his Sandarbhas. He specifically says he's going to rely heavily on the statements of Sridhar Swami because that's the guiding mark or indicator to understand messages of Srimad Bhagavatam. So here he's saying, I'm going to comment on these verses, although Sridhar Swami didn't, right in his commentary. But because they are found in many editions, and because Chitsuka and Madhava's followers have commented upon them, Madhva, followers have commented upon them, and because they are full of rasa, they will be explained here. Though there are many versions and sequences of these verses, the verses and sequence have been selected according to the Gaudiya Sampradaya. Now what does that mean? Just like there's different versions of Ramayana, like too many, or very many. I'm not aware of any detail, but there apparently are different, slightly variant versions of Srimad Bhagavatam. And, you know, certainly one of the marking points of what Gaudiya Vaishnavas accept is what Sridhar Swami commented upon. So that version is accepted because Lord Chaitanya accepted Sridhar Swami as the commentator. And there's other versions because from time to time they make specific reference without saying which, but it says some versions say such and such. They use this word instead of that word. It's like very tiny variation, but there's some variations. Paragraph. What type of joy did he give to his people? Krishna. Two verses speak of the Polinda group who lived not far away. When the vendor said, buy these fruits, Krishna, who desired the fruit, but who actually bestows all fruits, gathered grains and came quickly. Though he was perfect in all respects, he desired fruit. Though he is the giver of all goals of human, to all goals to humans, he took some grains and went there. He did not consider that he held very little in his little hand, since he was absorbed in his childhood pastimes. He took grains because that's all there was in front of him. This shows his haste in going to the vendor. And Sanatana Goswami says some of the things, same things, but he who gives excellently all results desired pilu fruits. So you know what are pilu fruits? Would you like to know what are pilu fruits? Ask your mother, I'm sure she knows. You don't? Pilu fruits. You can look at pictures of them, but they're common in Vrindavan, and they're little, it's like a bush that in certain seasons, of course, there's the little green, they're clusters of them, and they're little green, and then they open, and then they become white or red. Little. They're available everywhere. Abundantly available, pilu fruits. So he who's has everything and awards everything is now bartering for some pilu fruits that are available everywhere. That's the point. Gopal Champu, this is our last. Gopal Champu is another writing of Jiva Goswami. And Gopal Champu is a particular literary style that he revived. It was not well known, but it's a classic literary style. And he even wrote one of his books as a book on how to write a champu. And then he wrote a champu, Gopal Champu. And it's a narration of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. And the format is a little different. It's similar but different. There are two students of Narada Muni. They're brothers. One's a little older, one's a little younger. And one is Madhu Kanta and the other is Snigdha Kanta. And their names mean something alike. And so they're introduced to Nanda Maharaj and the elder Brijbasis, and who are they? And they were given, it says who they are, and they're students of Narada, and they were given a special power by Narada, two powers, to know everything and to be able to narrate everything very sweetly. So commonly, Madhu Kanta is the one that's speaking. The younger brother Snigdha Kanta is asking, and then the Brijbasis from time to time comment, and they express happiness and joy and different emotions and stir the conversation further. That's the format. So Madhu Kanta is speaking. Hear another amusing story. Krishna, who gives bliss to all, heard the attractive words, "Please purchase these fruits." Restless-eyed Krishna, not finding anything to give, in his small hands took a handful of grains which had fallen on the ground and quickly went to the fruit seller. But in moving quickly, the grains fell from his small hands without his knowing. He went to exchange his empty hands for the basket of fruit. The fruit seller smiled and was overcome by the sweet expression on his smiling face, making him hold his eager hands out. The woman, from whom he begged fruit, filled his hands with fruits. Enchanted by his sweetness, she did not consider whether her basket was full or empty. When Krishna entered his house, not seeing that her basket, made of leaves, was full of jewels, and not noticing the load, she became absorbed in Krishna's beauty. She went home to get more fruit for his family members. When she got home and realized that she had jewels in her basket, in separation from the attractive face of Krishna, the fortunate woman began to consider that she had been deprived of the great treasure of his beauty, since in seeing him, she had forgotten the whole world. Knowing that he had brought happiness after great difficulties to the woman, he began dancing, as if holding great treasure in his hands. He approached his mother, showing sweet, fickle actions, enthusiastically bound all the fruits in the edge of his mother's cloth. His mother said, "Where did you get these fruits?" The son said, in half words like a child, an old fortunate woman collected some fruits, and taking the price of grains, she gave me these fruits. His mother said, "Oh, child, do not trust all people like people of this house." The son said, "I do not know about mistrust." Seeing the fruit seller return after some time, Krishna again went to her and then had his mother distribute the fruits to others at every opportunity. His mother blissfully distributed the fruit with her trembling hands, but could never exhaust the fruit. For several days, she remained smiling and astonished. Those who tasted the fruit became surprised by the sweetness and could not forget it. So that's Gopal Champu. So a comment about Jiva Goswami. What he's known for primarily is his erudition. Prabhupada said that it is said that in the history of the world, there's never been a greater scholar than Jiva Goswami. And of course, other traditions that may have a different picture than that one. But his scholarship is his outstanding attribute. But in addition to scholarly writings, here's something that's just a different kind of writing than just scholarship. It's very, very sweet and embellished in ways that, it's not fiction. And how to understand how the elements that are a little bit different in his account than the Bhagavatam's account, how do we understand that? And the way to understand it is the Goswamis were able to experience Krishna's pastimes. They were true to scholarship. At the same time, they were able to experience Krishna's pastimes. There's this description that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as we know, when he went to Vrindavan, he found Radhakund. You familiar with that? He found Radhakund. It's at the northern end of Govardhan Hill, and at that time, so long after Krishna's pastimes, the places of Krishna's pastimes had been lost. So he saw there was a pond in the middle of a agricultural field, and he went to take bath in that pond of water, and he declared in ecstatic jubilation that this is Radhakund, and then later it became excavated as Radhakund by Raghunath Das Goswami. So what we see there, what we see today is not what Lord Chaitanya saw, or it wasn't there during his visit. And other than that, we don't know of many places where Lord Chaitanya established. There is one other place. There's a particular tree under which Lord Chaitanya sat near the bank of the river Jamuna. And that was a favored place by Krishna. There's pastimes connected with Rasa Leela, where when when Krishna left the Rasa dance because the gopis had become proud, and they went searching for him, Radha went to this place, and she was feeling such separation and absorption in Krishna that her complexion became blackish. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he went there, similarly, in feelings of Radha and separation from Krishna, his complexion became blackish. So that was another place. It's a very special temple and special tree. The first time, this is just going on, but the first time I visited Vrindavan was 1974, I think. Something like that. And it was just a little bit after Prabhupada had taken the World Sankirtan Party to Vrindavan. That year, it could have been 72 or 73. At Radha Damodar Temple, every day in the back, he was giving class on nectar devotion, as recorded. They would read and he would comment on nectar, the celebrated nectar devotion series of lectures. There's photographs of the devotees sitting there at Prabhupada's feet. And so that year that he took people around, that the next year, we went to Vrindavan, and, I very clearly recall Guru Das was the one that was guiding the devotees that had come for, it was for the Mayapur Vrindavan Festival. That's what it was called at the time. Prabhupada wanted the devotees that were serving him in different places in the world would come for rejuvenation and purification to the Holy Dham, Mayapur and Vrindavan, annually for rekindling and rejuvenation, and then going back for their further preaching. And I remember very clearly Guru Das speaking about this particular place and saying that Prabhupada said that this particular tree under which Lord Chaitanya sat, and which long ago in the same location Radharani sat, the particular tree was a desire tree. So it's a celebrated place. You know, the followers of Lord Chaitanya, the Gaudiya, there's a Gaudiya Math temple at that place. But it's the tree is considered a desire tree. Not like other trees in Vrindavan aren't, and it has an exclusive quality, but because it was said like that, it was accepted by Bhaktisiddhanta like that, and therefore by the followers in the Chaitanya line, it's a desire tree. So, but he, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, didn't establish many places in a formal way. What he did, Radhakund, became very formal. But then he gave Rupa Goswami the service of two main things, writing books and establishing places of Krishna's pastimes. Now, if you had a service like that, how would you do it? You'd have to have spiritual qualification to do it. So he was well versed in the scriptures, and it is said he would go to the place and he would recite the pastime of that place, like, you know, more or less some place. And by deep meditation and absorption in the pastimes, he could see the pastimes, and therefore he could establish the place. You know, it's kind of otherworldly, but that was the procedure. There's a nice description. Maybe some of you've been to Radhakund, and one of the temples at Radhakund is the Gopinath temple. And the history is recorded in Bhakti Ratnakar this way. When Janava, who was Lord Nityananda's wife, one of his two wives, her two sisters became his wives. She had never been to Vrindavan because she was always absorbed in serving Lord Nityananda in Kardaha, his headquarters, his home. So after his departure from this world, she wanted very much to go to Vrindavan. So she went to Vrindavan. And the Vaishnavas received her like they would receive Lord Chaitanya or Lord Nityananda. But the wife of Lord Nityananda was received with greatest honor and respect and dignity for many reasons. She was so qualified. And when she went to this area around, because it had been newly excavated by Raghunath Das Goswami. And that's another story. In the excavation, she was circumambulating around Radhakund, and she became drawn to a certain place. She went to that certain place because now it's all built up, but then it wasn't. And she indicated, right here is Gopinath. Build a temple for him right here. So they built the temple for Gopinath because she said this is the place of Gopinath. And then, as they were making this little temple, it's inside a compound. So, she liked to sit by the side of Radhakund and perform her chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. And she would sit for hours each day. There was a tree that was near that sitting place, and the tree from her chanting, just even it was other than the season for it to blossom, it would become, the foliage would grow and grow and to provide shade for her. And they eventually made like a separate little stairway where she could privately bathe in Radhakund and not be seen by others, so she'd have that privacy. Then a little kutir, a little place where she could sit. And one day when she came in from chanting, she described what she saw. And she saw spanning over Radhakunda bridge. And on the bridge, Radha and Krishna were enjoying pastimes together. There were gopis assisting them in their pastimes. And this was, you know, what she saw was going on in Vrindavan when we don't see those things going on in Vrindavan. It's called Aprakat Lila, which qualified people can experience and even enter into in their spiritual identity. So that's the method that the Goswamis were able to establish places of Krishna's pastimes and write literature about Krishna's pastimes from what they actually experienced. So that's how to understand what Jiva Goswami, or elsewhere what the other Goswamis would write, wasn't fiction. It's very revealing of pastimes of Krishna that are not recorded in Srimad Bhagavatam, but are eternally taking place. By their kindness, we come to know of Krishna's pastimes. So from a position of realization. And we, of course, it takes faith to accept that, but we accept that. just as we accept the, on faith, many things that we don't understand about all kinds of things. I mean, all kinds of things. Like the soul. I was listening to Prabhupada describing to somebody, he was a lecturer in New York, 1966. Someone is asking questions about the soul. And Prabhupada, for some reason, started speaking about, the size of the soul is very tiny. And he said, do you accept that there are atoms? Have you seen an atom? But you accept that there's atoms. And do you accept, then he went on, giving things that people accept on faith, although they've never directly seen, so you haven't directly seen a soul, but the authority of the Bhagavad Gita and the Vedas tells us there's a soul. So we know of the soul through authority, just like you know about atoms through authority, or you know about electrons, or whatever things that we don't see. Do you have a mind? Have you seen a mind? You accept that there's a mind. You accept that you're an individual, that you're not me and I'm not you. Although we haven't seen our individuality. So, the things that we understand and accept on authority. And gradually, if the authority is a valid authority, one can come to understand more than just accept. One can come to realize. So, then he was explaining to this person, there's jnana and vijnana. There's theoretical, and then there's practical. Practical realization, vijnana, of transcendence. And that's how we know about transcendence. It looks like the festival of the Holy Name is going to be, it's going to happen. By the way, Badahari's coming. You've been told, right? No? You're the drummer. Have you been told? I'm passing on the word. Badahari's coming, and you're the drummer. Because Mukunda's health doesn't permit him to go. He got a health issue. So you're the guy. You're signed up. Be healthy, okay? Okay. So some of it's going to be, we'll see what's going on. The city of Chicago just bumped up for religious functions or whatever the term they use, gatherings. You can have up to 50 people, provided they wear masks and stuff. So we may do less than that. Let's see what's going on in 2 weeks' time. But one of the persons who is going to participate is Rabindra Swarup Prabhu, and the topics are already identified. And the topic for Saturday, starting at 10:45 a.m., is going to be bhakti. Something like this: bhakti as a process of increasing transcendental knowledge. Something like that. I mean, he's a PhD in philosophy. So it's not just going to be a philosophical thing. It's bhakti. Let's see how he says it. But from what I've understood in principle, it's the verse of the first canto, chapter 2, Vasudevi Bhagavati, Bhakti Yoga Prayojataha, Janayati Ashu Vairagyam, Jnanam cha yadahaitukam. Knowledge awakens from bhakti. So bhakti, the knowledge of bhakti is not just, something that's on a bookshelf, or it's just something that's written. It's something that you come to experience. And as bhakti awakens, your experience awakens. And then it verifies what's in the book that's on the shelf. Or, one gets to realize. So, these acharyas' commentaries are like that. It's not just scholarship. Not just scholarship. There's scholarship, but it's not just scholarship. it's realized knowledge. And hearing from a realized person, it helps to awaken bhakti. Now, our training in education systems is gather information and put this information together with that information, you get information technology. Or how to store information and recycle information and mix information and so forth. So, but it's not like that. It's from the soul itself. It's the awakening of bhakti having become awakened by the bhakti process. Then there's the disclosure of transcendental knowledge, just like that's what Bhagavad Gita is. It's a book of transcendental knowledge. But it's not just information, it's the message of bhakti from Krishna to Arjuna, which means from Krishna to us through Krishna, through Arjuna. In Krishna's childhood pastimes, back to that's the section, it's that the disclosure is even when one understands Krishna to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead, keep going. There's something further. And Krishna wants those who understand him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the source of everything, is that he who is the source of everything is controlled by love, pure love. And the residents of Vrindavan have that pure love to a superlative degree. So we should treasure the residents of Vrindavan. Not imitate, but treasure and emulate and follow and glorify and worship and become influenced by their love. Although it's remote. Here we are in suburbs of Chicago and we're thinking of the residents of Vrindavan. But it's so even that contemplation through sound is very powerful. Let's see if there's some discussion. We'll give what we've been doing is the persons who are present given the opportunity first, so the people online can send something in. See if there's anything at all you'd like to discuss.
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. Just a comment and then a question. In part of the commentary you read, it said that it's difficult to understand these Krishna's pastimes. But it's been really nice actually to hear them. And in part of it also says it's joyful. So I'm finding even though, and in one of your lectures, you had also mentioned that it requires some finer spiritual intelligence to understand these. So even though I feel like I don't understand them, they're very joyful to hear and very hope-giving because I work with public and going out and working with people, it's been a little fearful. So hearing these pastimes that, you know, when devotees call out, Krishna is there. He's protecting them. So hearing that over and over again, it gives some solace that Krishna is there protecting even in difficult times. And even, you know, even if I'm just still a practicing devotee. So that's my comment. And the question, it's my contemplation that I've come to realize I'd asked a question and my intention was to, understand Prabhupada's, teaching for my own protection. But in your answer, I came to realize that while I'm trying to do that, I could be judgmental towards others who maybe are not following what Prabhupada has recommended. So I felt that there may be like a very thin line between while you're trying to discriminate and go around the judgmental side. So I want to understand.
That's a good topic. That's a good topic.
Discriminate but not be judgmental.
It's a good topic. And it is a fine line. So, Krishna wants us to discern or discriminate. Discriminate in the healthy sense. Discriminate in the sense of, this is in this category and that's in that category. That's what IQ tests do, is they examine your capacity to discriminate. It's what IQ tests do. There's four objects and four words or four somethings, and then which is the one that isn't part of the set. It's just testing your ability to discriminate. And it's done cleverly so that you have to be intelligent. You have to have a refined intelligence to see what's really the one that doesn't fit. That's what IQ tests do. So that's not judgmental. It's just discerning one thing from another thing. So let's take the modes of nature. This is this mode, that's that mode, and that's the other mode. And they have their characteristics. So that's discerning. And then the judgmental is, discerning capacity is, like the Bhagavatam says, wood is better than raw earth, smoke is better than wood, and fire is better than smoke. They're all just earth and the transformations of earth. So that's where it's all the same. It's earth. And then the fire is especially good because you can perform sacrifice or you can do practical things. Of course, you can do practical things with wood and with earth as well. But specific to the Vedic process of sacrifice, fire is particularly valuable. Smoke indicates you're getting there. But you're not there yet. And then the wood is better than the raw earth. For specific for the objective, for performance of sacrifice. Now you may use clay pots for sacrifice also. In any case, there's hierarchy in the modes of nature. So that there's a discrimination and there's a discrimination. Here's the mode of goodness. And the mode of goodness is better. But it's not judgmental. Not yet. It becomes judgmental when you think, okay, I'm the judge. And this is good. And if this is good, then that's not good. And somebody over there it says, smoke is good. With somebody over there that says wood is good. The mode of ignorance is good. Mm-hmm. That's judgmental. So if Krishna is at the center, then it's discrimination. If I'm at the center, it's judgmental. Putting it in really simple terms. And when I'm at the center, that means false ego, because we're not at the center. So false ego is at the center, thinking I'm at the center. And that's judgmental. That is not just intelligence or discriminating one thing from another thing. It's this negative zone. Uh, I was just reading something recently about Abraham Lincoln. And Abraham Lincoln, you know, here we are in Illinois. You know, he was from Illinois, from Springfield, Illinois. That was his home. And he had, you know, it was during his presidency that the Civil War was fought to free slaves. But he had a very interesting take on slavery, even before he became president, which got modified a little bit. You know, it's just white people and black people are not equal. It wasn't a spiritual conception. He wasn't so much initially opposed to slavery, but he was opposed to people being able to move from any position and better themselves. So he found the slavery was immoral because it didn't allow people mobility. And he had his own, like, take on things. Anyway, there's details and details in his view on God. He was not known to be a theist. You know, that's not a well-known thing, but the biographies of Abraham Lincoln know this about him. He was a good man. He was like an, you know, agnostic moralist, which is very popular today. Agnostic moralists. So, you know, the person that killed him didn't like, you know, that he was opposing slavery. He was a man from the South. Anyway, and had inclinations in favor of slavery. He thought that was a good thing. So, It judgmentalism leads to, it's false ego based, and it leads to lower modes of nature, behaviors. Because it's rooted in false ego that's influenced by not only goodness, but lower modes more prominently. So that's where judgmentalism goes. It forms groups, and then groups clash. People, it's not pandita samadarshana. It's not a seeing with equal vision while recognizing differences. And when you recognize differences with equal vision, your behaviors can be different. You can be a discriminating person without judgment, and you don't go, using Prabhupada's phrase, you don't go and embrace a tiger. You behave appropriately for each person, but not in a judgmental way. It's fine line. But the division is self-centered and Krishna-centered. Okay. Anything? Okay. How are we doing online?
A few
questions.
Huh? A few questions.
Okay.
Megha Mataji from Naperville has similar question to Govinda Mohini Mataji. How can we be compassionate towards people who are not devotees or even people who are bound by bad habits?
How to be compassionate is customized for each person, but the principle is remind them of Krishna. And you can, you know, one way to remind them Krishna is give them prasadam. Another way to remind Krishna is you model the character and quality of a devotee. And then there may be so many other things depending upon the individual and the time, place, circumstance. But in your heart of hearts, your compassion is to remind them of Krishna. However you do that, suited to you and suited to them and suited to the circumstance. So to get that centered in the heart, has everything to do with feeling a connection between Krishna or your own heart and your own heart. And when that's there, then you want to naturally, it's the Vaishnava of compassion. As we were discussing yesterday evening, Sarve Sukhino Bhavantu, for those who heard the class yesterday. I bet that the little girl that was living in the home, she learned that one. I had to repeat it several times. Sarve is the vocative of Sarva, just like Radha in the vocative becomes Radhe, or Hara becomes Hare. So Sarva means all. Sarve is the vocative. Sarve. Sukhino. Sukha means happiness. Sukha dukkha. Happiness, distress. Sukha. Sarve sukhino bhavantu. Bhavantu. Like bhavati. That the world become, that the universe, all living entities become happy. Prabhupada's statement, this is a Vaishnava. And one of the natural characteristics of a Vaishnava is compassion. So that how to be compassionate is sarve sukhino bhavantu. And how that comes out depends upon you and depends upon the circumstance and the individual. But if that's in your heart, it'll come out. And some of the, several of the principal means of sarve sukhino bhavantu is prasadam distribution, book distribution, and the holy name. Giving these to others. Of course, give to others side by side with carrying that character, that quality inside, and living your life as an exemplary Vaishnava outside, as well as inside. Then that's the best service. That's the best compassion.
This is from Lingaraja Prabhu. A lot of times, regarding the fruit vendor pastime, we hear that the fruit vendor getting the jewels and gold in return from Krishna.
Yeah.
But not much details about her attachment to Krishna's beauty even after going back to her home. It's one of the rare pastimes that we stress more about material benefit.
No. Exactly the opposite. Say no with a tone, because Jiva Goswami made it very clear. She, you know, that the paintings show she's looking, oh, look at all these jewels and gold. Jiva Goswami is explaining she didn't even notice. When she was carrying, instead of, you know, fruits, she's carrying jewels and gold. She didn't notice the weight. And when she got back to her home to get more fruits, she was feeling, oh, I've lost the vision of this beloved boy, Krishna. Her absorption was not in the materialistic sense. Now, why did Krishna fill her basket with jewels and gold? You know, I have to ask Krishna why he did that, but she was from a poor background, and he's reciprocating with the poor background person. Here's abundance instead of it's opposite. But she wasn't enamored by the abundance. She went back not to get more jewels and gold, but to give more fruits. And then the reciprocation wasn't more jewels and gold, but it was the basket kept filling up with fruits. As much as Mother DeSoto gave out, there was more fruits. She didn't have to go back for more. This Krishna was enjoying a pastime. That's specifically what that what was said by Madhukanta. Krishna was enjoying in giving his mercy to this materially impoverished person in a way that was very loving. Now, one can assume reasonably that she had a loving nature. Her impoverishment wasn't at all an indication of her condition of heart or her piety. It was a condition of when Krishna reciprocated with her because of her condition of heart. And so it's not a materialistic perk. It was another kind of reciprocation between Krishna and one of his devotees. Jiva Goswami makes that very clear.
This is from Uttama Bhakta Prabhu. Krishna is the Supreme Lord and I'm his servant is knowledge. I want to serve him and his devotees and continue to do that. It is bhakti. Is that correct?
Yes.
The second question. Can jnani be used for those who don't speculate?
Do you understand the question? You are a devotee. We are trying to be devotees. And we read Bhagavad Gita. And our reason for reading Bhagavad Gita is not to become jnanis or to become packed up with jnana. Our reason for reading Bhagavad Gita is to stimulate our bhakti. And as we, when that mission or purpose is achieved, then knowledge and realization increase. Knowledge and realization increase as a byproduct of bhakti. That's what we're interested in. Not cultivation of jnana. We're interested in furthering our devotion to Krishna by understanding him and his wishes of mercy giving to us better. That's what we want.
This is from Radha Vallabha Prabhu from Houston.
Hmm.
As stated in class, Krishna is controlled by the love of pure devotees.
Hmm.
So sadhakas striving to connect to the instructions of pure devotees, are they delivered by Lord in spite of the limitations or anarthas?
Yeah. I mean, it's not instant, but yes.
The purification and bhakti practices, the purification and the bhakti practices do provide some contentment or blessings. So the tendency to enjoy the pleasure in devotional service rather than serve in selfless manner. How to overcome this tendency to enjoy the blessings or the contentment that is given by purification?
The question is clear. I'll add to the question. In Madhurya Kandambani, this whoever is asking this question can go and look. In Madhurya Kandambani, In the section that's describing anartha nivritti, that one of the categories of anarthas is this one. And it's when there's a little bit of success in bhakti, then there's some fruit that comes from that successful bhakti. And there's a tendency to want to be the enjoyer of that little success in the fruits of bhakti. Because the enjoying independent of Krishna tendency is our conditioning. And how to get on the other side of it is be aware that that's a tendency, as this person asking the question is aware, it is a tendency, and you guard against the tendency. So how do you guard against the tendency, which is the question? Be aware and stay away from it. Like, If you see a bottle that has a skull and crossbones on it and it says poison, you don't drink it. You may want to keep it somewhere safe, but you don't drink it, and you don't let children near that because they may not understand, don't drink it. And go in the other direction. You compensate for a tendency that you know is toxic to a tendency that's more healthy. And you do that. So you stay in the side of continuing with your devotional practices that now have become a little successful, and focus on the purpose of this is to get stronger in the mood of wishing that Krishna will be pleased. Let's just take your mridanga playing. You know, there's one thing to become proficient in mridanga, and it's another thing to do that and cultivate the proficiency such that when kirtan is performed, Krishna enjoys. Now, that's a higher position than what musicians normally like to do. They like just to perfect their musical skill, or their voice skill, or their cooking skill, or their dancing skill, or their architectural skill, or their whatever it is skill, and get some satisfaction in developing that skill. Cooking better, and people go, wow, that was really good, or something, or painting, or something. So there's the effort here to, it's kind of on hold, but to build the temple and then work very hard to build the temple and then celebrate, you know, I did it, or we did it. And that's different than the pure sense of here's an offering unto you, Krishna. You please enjoy this facility that we've created for you and let us use it wisely. It's the same. It's you go to the other side, you go to the bhakti side, that which you have become a little proficient at, let that proficiency become more devotional, more for the pleasure of Krishna, and then it becomes beautified like anything.
This is from Sandhya Mataji in Naperville. I've heard that Bilva Mangal Thakur also was able to see the pastimes of Krishna and Vrindavan. Could you please elaborate on that?
What's to elaborate? He was blind, but he could see the pastimes. So Krishna gave him the eyes to see, that's not the material eyes. And Krishna gave him the eyes to see because of his pure devotion. So he could see without material eyes.
Amrita Keli Mataji's question. It is very pleasing to the heart to hear these sweet pastimes. We hear that these pastimes can stimulate such feelings in the heart, even for one who is not very advanced. How can we take these feelings to deepen our sadhana bhakti and not get carried away by these emotions as if I am advanced and so I'm having these feelings when we read or hear these elevated pastimes?
Well, it's in one word, it's gratitude. Krishna is very kind. He's lifting, he's opening, he's disclosing. You know, it's the sense of gratitude. The in check against the tendency of being the enjoyer. That's the me-centered consciousness. I'm enjoying now. Instead of Krishna's kindness is taking place. Are we ready for you?
does one have to be comfortably situated or kind-hearted to love or serve others?
No.
Once Bhakti Marga Swami said, when he was growing up, less was more.
Okay. There's no have to. There's no material requirement, pre-requirement, or prohibition. If you have this, you can't. If you don't have this, you can't. There's no material condition for bhakti.
Maharaj, I have a question about nectar of devotion. The Bhakti Shastri, we cover only the first 19 chapters.
Yeah.
I was asked many times, when can
What's
we
What's on the other half?
Yeah, and I said, as far as I have heard, we first have to study the Bhagavatam, and then, with permission of Spiritual Master, we can read when we advance a little bit more. So I don't know if there's... How do I...
That's a nice answer.
And
I mean, Rupa Goswami has written it for us, but it is, it's very detailed and very esoteric and incomprehensible to a living entity that is very covered. So there's some, even in the first 19 chapters, there's some very elevated subjects which we can't understand, but that's, that's okay. The other subjects are far more elevated. And there's a sequel to that. Following Nectar Devotion, the last chapters, there's another extension beyond that one. But that's, not recommended for us at all. Rupa Goswami wrote it. There's this story, Bhakti Siddhanta, it's called Ujjwala Neelamani. And Bhakti Siddhanta said, is it okay to print that book? Because Bhakti Vinod Thakur was printing writings of previous acharyas and so forth and so on, not only his own. And Bhakti Vinod said, yes, you can print a copy, and you just print one copy and read it yourself. Meaning it's not meant for us. Although there's some devotees that try to read it, and it's very elevated. Go ahead.
Maharaj, another thought I was just having, contemplating after hearing all these lectures, when we hear about these pastimes of Krishna and we hear how Lord Brahma had, he wasn't even wanting to feel that he is Lord Brahma, and he wanted to just like take shelter and be born as a grass like that. And it's so valuable to kind of see these personalities as examples, how they don't want to be significant or important, to feel important or something like that. And I was thinking, by hearing this, it's bringing some light how the tendency to feel important in some way or the other, it kind of bothers me. And I think I'm trying to understand, when I find myself to seeking for myself to be important in someone's life or something, it's so much about myself, and it blocks mood of service. And I guess I want to hear how or what mood can I cultivate, or what can I have in my mind to overcome this?
Well, your question is a different version of the previous question. One of the previous questions is being the enjoyer of. And it's not so dissimilar from the first question discerning or discriminating and judging. You know, this judging is different than getting some recognition or attention or acknowledgement or something like that, being the enjoyer of something. It's different, but the principle is one is rooted in false ego and the other is rooted in Krishna's at the center. And bhakti is where Krishna's at the center. So we do something because we want something. That's fruitive. That's not bhakti. And when something comes, then we, you know, there's this internal celebration, at least internal. Yay, I did it. And then what's next? Because that's what we're used to. We're used to achieving and then going on to the next level of achieving. I mean, it's material civilization. It doesn't have to be like ugly. It can be, you know, mode of goodness, but it, you know, it's material civilization. So that's an obstacle on the bhakti path. So same, recognize what it is. It's got, you know, skull and crossbones on the bottle. And you don't drink it. And you put it somewhere. And because you may need to use that for some purpose or another, whatever. And then you go to the other side. So it's kind of like here's two ways to check. That one is, I've told this story before, but one of my godbrothers, Prabhupada disciples, is now departed this world. His name is Sridhar Swami. And I noticed one time, we were on Navadvip Parikrama. After, you know, the devotees go out and they leave the Mayapur campus and they go for 7 days to the places of Navadvip that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu performed his pastimes, that Lord Nityananda took Jiva Goswami. We went to all those places. And then there's a campsite. So I know, and we put all of our sleeping gear and stuff in a pickup truck, not a pickup truck, but like one of those big lorries. And then, you know, the devotees would unload and then you'd put up, for, you know, your mosquito net and roll out your sleeping bag and, you know, your stuff. And we had like Boy Scouts or something, or, you know, boot camp. We had to keep a minimum sized stuff. So, the sannyasis would stay over there. And I noticed Sridhar Swami one day, he was setting up everybody's mosquito net. And I was like, you know, you're a very senior sannyasi. You're given sannyas by Srila Prabhupada. You're so like, why are you doing this? And he reached in his pocket, pulled out a 3x5 card and said, I've recognized that I have a tendency to be proud of my intelligence. He just got into the detail. You know, I have an IQ that's such and such. And I know that, and I'm proud because I'm an intelligent person, and I want to curb this pride. So, and I've been doing this for like some number of years, I forget. Every day I consciously go out of that zone into the humble service zone and go out of my way unobserved, undetected by anybody to do something that's just a menial service for others. And 5 times a day, and he showed me 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You know, the card was full, and he did it consistently for years, knowing that that's a tendency. So you put something on the other side of the pan scale, and do it consistently. It doesn't have to, you know, to get to the point where it's all the time. You do it at least some of the time. You consciously. You know, this other is this alignment exercise at the end of a day or some period of time the decisions that I made and the actions that I took, how much were they in alignment with my values? And that's right away, it's a flash that says, I'm not aligned. I'm doing it for other reasons, and what I hold is a valuable principle to live by. I'm doing it for some other reason. And of course, you can delude yourself and have your blind spots and all that. But if you go down the path of trying to put something on the other side of the pan scale and check the tendency over there, you're making progress. And stay with it. Okay. Last chance. You're good. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.